If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet.
Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation, a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host, Adam Pranica.
I'm your other host, Ben Harrison.
Ben, we're cruising right through season two. This was an episode I wanted to veto. And
you were tempted.
About 15 minutes in, I was still pretty sure I wanted to veto it.
Well, I guess we should get right into it then. I felt very differently.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'd like to hear about why that is exactly. Let's kick off season two, episode three, Elementary Dear Data.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
So Enterprise it's gotten to the rendezvous point early. It's going to meet up with the USS Victory and... Data is wandering down to engineering because he's been told that there's some urgent business that he needs to discuss with Chief Engineer Geordi LaForge. Shimoda's not around, unfortunately.
Yeah, Data's doing that tight walk like he has to shit. Like he's kind of speed walking all around the ship trying to get there.
Yeah, Geordi is working on a model ship, a pretty cool one. It's like a, I don't know, Dreadnought or something like that, the original USS Victory, that the HMS.
Yeah, this model ship, it does not look like the sort of thing you could buy at a hobby shop and put together. This is like the size of an executive desk. It's huge.
Yeah, real cool, real fun to look at.
Yeah, it must have taken him like 5 years to build it. Like, it's pretty intricate.
Yeah, and Geordi says he's made it as a gift for the captain of the Starship Victory, which makes me wonder, like, why Geordi is, like, this is a, like, if somebody gave me this, I would feel indebted to them for the rest of my life.
Well, I had guessed that the captain of the Victory was a woman, and that this was yet another uncomfortable display of affection that we'll get to know from the character of Geordi. Did you get that LeVar Burton sounds like he's fighting a massive sinus infection on this episode?
This is my gift to the Victory's Captain Zimbara.
I didn't, but I watched this on my laptop in a hotel room, so don't take any audio notes from me particularly
wow.
Seriously.
It goes uncommented on the entire hour, but holy shit, he sounds really sick. And I couldn't find anything in the show notes about it, but I'm just going to guess that LeVar Burton really rose to the occasion here. Could have called in sick and didn't.
Geordi functionally says, Data, I showed you mine. Now you show me yours. And unfortunately, he's not talking about ding-dongs. He's talking about recreations that they enjoy. So Geordi enjoys building model ships.
Boy, that was a long walk to that punchline. Where are we going, Ben? Oh, you'll find out.
Don't worry, Adam. It's a dick joke, just like always. Have you ever heard me go on a long walk that didn't end up in a dick joke?
For some reason, I always expect different, and I am always delighted when it's the same.
Yeah, you are Charlie Brown, and I am Lucy, and
yeah.
And that football is a dick.
There's another long walk for you.
Yeah. Oh, love them. So they basically agree that Geordi's like, here's how I've been spending all my free time. Now let's do something fun for you. And Geordi basically tells Data that his free time should be spent on the holodeck. Like, it doesn't seem like a choice for Data or something that he would choose, but he pulls out a sack with a pipe in it, and Data gets the picture that, oh yeah, he gets to be Sherlock Holmes again.
Yeah, I get to put on that ridiculous accent one more time.
An accent that everyone knows and loves.
So they go into the holodeck.
Program complete. You may enter.
It is Sherlock Holmes's Baker Street apartments.
I will play Sherlock Holmes.
And
Lieutenant LaForge will be Dr. John Watson.
And they're marveling at how great the holodeck is, which I feel like in these early episodes is like a requisite. Every time they load up a holodeck program, everybody has to spend 10 minutes talking about how intricate the program appears to be.
Yeah. Everyone's really surprised to be there.
Yeah. So, you have to assume that it's like putting on an Oculus Rift for us now, where it's like, whoa, this is so cool. I can't believe this technology exists now. Like, the Enterprise is an early adopter for this technology, presumably.
Yeah, the thing about people in the future is they seem really resistant to the sort of addiction that we might feel in the present. Like, how could you not want to be there all the time?
Yeah. They're in there, and you know, no sooner have they settled down talking about how wonderfully intricate the simulation is than Inspector somebody knocks on the door and announces that a mystery is afoot, and Data has it solved in under a minute. It's like, you know, the guy that he comes with has complained of a crime, and Data's like, he's not the victim, he's the perpetrator, and he's in league with the Prussian government or something like that.
Yeah, like basically as soon as the characters enter the room, he has solved the mystery and torn apart one of the characters' piece of clothing in order to do it.
I mean, it's like going to the movie theater and walking past the people lined up to see the new Star Wars movie and telling them what happens to Han at the end.
Right.
You know, he knows the ending, so he jumps right to it. And, like, Geordi is so angry at Data in this scene.
Computer, freeze program.
Han is Leia's brother, right?
Yeah, you got that right.
And then Rey is Han's daughter?
Concubine.
Right.
Yeah.
Who's Yoda's dad? This is about as angry as we've seen Geordi, right?
Exit.
About anything.
Yeah, he is real pissed.
He's rip shit.
Where are you going, Geordi?
I'm done.
They go to 10 forward, and like eventually he says, like, Data, I'm not mad at you. It's just that was not what I had in mind. But yeah, he played like the LeVar Burton plays this in a strange way.
I think we're starting to see a picture of Geordi that is, you know, he's got a real short temper. He's real uncomfortable around women.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you're starting to see the picture of a man who really can't have relationships of any kind.
Yeah. You don't blame women for being skeeved out by him.
His best friend is a robot? Kind of troubling.
So they're in 10 forward, chewing through their difference of opinion, and who should happen to chime in but the exquisitely bigoted Dr. Pulaski.
Who always seems to be in 10 forward, right?
Yeah, she is drinking on the job.
Is she a fake alcoholic? Is that her deal?
Yeah, synthaholic.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if they've talked about synthahol yet.
Drugs can make you feel good.
Yeah, I don't think so.
You know, I mean, Sonny Clemens was real impressed with that martini, so.
Sure. He was an idiot, though. You could fool him pretty easily.
Yeah. I mean, if he thought that guitar was good, he didn't have very high standards.
Yeah, we can't trust his judgment.
But they get in a... What is in this episode and in, like, actual philosophical and artificial research, like, a pretty interesting debate, like, can Data, a computer intelligence, be said to actually be intelligent? And the bet is made that Data couldn't solve a a Holmes-type mystery that he hasn't read.
It's sort of a weird variation of the Turing test, right?
Yeah, exactly. Like, and this episode, like this is a hot debate. I mean, like there's definitely people that are that fall on either side of it in the like academic research world. And I thought this was a really fun way to kind of introduce the premise of the debate and explore it a little bit in a fun sci-fi television show type of context.
Sure. Like Pulaski's contention is that Data would be unable to solve any mystery requiring him to use any kind of like intuition or creativity.
Right. He doesn't understand the human soul. And that's one thing, you know, for all of the analytical similarities he has with Sherlock Holmes, he has this huge empathic blind spot when it comes to human nature.
Unlike Pulaski, whose bedside manner is like fucking troll. I don't know. Like, yeah. She's terrible.
Yeah. You know, she is more in line with your average Starfleet doctor that we've seen depicted on screen, though. I mean, Dr. Crusher is very unique in being a nurturing doctor with actual bedside manner. When you think about Bones McCoy, when you think about Hologram Doctor from Star Trek Voyager, when you think about arrogant, thinks more highly of himself than anything in the world Doctor from Deep Space Nine, like...
Do you think the difference is that Beverly's the only mother of that group and the rest of them are solo, single practitioners? I mean, Pulaski's womb has been dusty for like 50 years. And McCoy, I don't believe we ever knew if he had a family or anything. It sure seemed like he didn't. Yeah. The rest of them were sort of rogue agents, doctors.
True.
And maybe it takes being a parent to be a doctor with some bedside manner.
Yeah.
It is a guiding principle with Darth Vader's base. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
Data is, as is his wont, a real good sport every time the doctor bust some fucking incredibly insulting language out.
Your artificial friend doesn't have a prayer of solving a Holmes mystery that he hasn't read.
He's doing that thing that your parents tell you to do when a bully is bullying you, and which is to just ignore them.
Right.
Which never actually works.
No, yeah.
It's only encouraging Pulaski further.
But essentially, Geordi and Pulaski make a bet that Data could do it if they had the computer synthesize a mystery. So
right.
They go back to the holodeck and they fire it up and say, like, synthesize a Holmes type mystery and let's see what happens. So they walk out and into the holodeck and they spend another 10 minutes talking about how plausible the simulation is. And then
these streets really do reek of shit.
London is a real dump in this time period. Data is quick to solve this mystery as well. And Pulaski accuses him of being a fraud because the computer has gone to very limited lengths to create this mystery by just combining a couple of elements of existing Sherlock Holmes stories.
That's their second try. So Geordi's like, all right, I've got an idea. He calls the Arch and he's like, look, can you come up with a Sherlock Holmesian style mystery that is difficult enough to confound Data?
Right. And I think he specifically calls for a villain that is smart enough to defeat Data. And this is an interesting scene because we first see Moriarty, who becomes this villain. He is walking around this simulated London, and he notices the Arch being called for before Geordi puts in this command, which winds up, you know, this command is the thing that triggers the danger in this episode because the computer makes it a villain that can defeat Data in the real world, not a villain that can defeat Data in a simulated holodeck game.
Right. And if you're not someone who watches these episodes, when you're on the holodeck, when you call the Arch, it just basically pulls up a big arched computer screen that you can then change your simulation through.
Right.
Like it allows you to talk to the computer.
It appears within the simulated world. It's not like it shuts everything down. So
right.
So it's strange that Moriarty is noticing this Arch before Geordi says that, because normally holodeck characters are programmed to be unaware of the fact that they are simulations.
Right.
Much in the same way that we are, man.
Whoa. So already Moriarty appears to be more capable than his fake brethren on the holodeck.
Right. Like a can-can girl comes up to him. She's like, what's that, governor?
So Moriarty notices this. The program has been changed, and Moriarty, like, feels something. Like, he has been changed
right.
by the program because acting.
Yeah.
Mother's Day is coming up, and one of the best gifts you can give a mom that you might share a bed with is doing some yard work. Some yard work downstairs, if you know what I mean. With Manscaped. This season, make sure you groom your carpets and your drapes with the leader in below-the-waist grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants to let the mother of your children know how much you appreciate her continuing to put up with you.
Moms, can't live with them, can't find a great gift for them. It's madness, and it's the same every year. Mother's Day comes around, and it's like, what's it going to be this year? Another robe, another candle, slippers, a sweater, flowers. We've got to do better than that, right? Well, you can, and it's actually the best gift you could possibly give a loved one. An Aura frame. Now, we have a policy to only do ads on our show for things that we actually like and use. And I gotta tell you, the Aura frame is probably the best gift I've ever given. The folks I've given an Aura frame to love it. And I love it too. Because when you give an Aura frame, you're not just giving a person a bunch of old pictures. You're giving them new pictures. Every time you send one, do it. Right now, Aura has a great sale for Mother's Day. Viewers can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and the code is SCARVES at checkout to show your support for the show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
My love is a FIFA.
Geordi and Data like start wandering around, and they get separated from Dr. Pulaski, and then they hear her scream, and they find her shoe on the street. It doesn't look like a shoe that would come off that easily, but
yeah, it looks like a shoe that would come off only if the foot was inside.
Yeah, but the game is afoot, and this is a mystery that Data doesn't know, you know, any of the details of. So there's some discussion surrounding that as they start to investigate and look for clues, which is that Data is like really surprised that the computer was even able to do this, which sort of puts him in Pulaski's camp in a weird way. Like, he doesn't think the computer that capable in the same way that she doesn't think he is that capable.
They're just kicking through the shitty streets of London.
Yeah.
They end up finding Moriarty's lair. After a couple of tries.
Yeah, it's like easier to find than you would hope a Holmes type villain would be. But
yeah, it's clear this part isn't the challenge.
Yeah, like he wants to be found. He hasn't concealed his tracks that well. And so they find him, and he comes out and says, you know, I have Catherine Pulaski, but I want some information, like what the fuck is going on. And he gives Data a piece of paper, and Data like basically shits himself and runs for the exit of the holodeck.
What do you think Data shitting himself sounds like? Like an espresso machine on clean mode?
I was just thinking like a handful of bolts and nuts falling to the floor. Like, you know, in The Great Escape, when they dump the dirt out on the baseball diamond from yep. the bottom of their trouser leg.
Uh-huh.
Just picture a bunch of fistfuls of hardware coming out the bottom of Data's uniform.
Perfect. Yeah, so Data's tracking this stuff through the Enterprise corridors because he's got to go talk to Picard.
Yeah.
And Geordi's like, what the fuck, man? Yeah. What's on the paper?
And this paper has survived coming out of the holodeck, which is, you know, something that has happened a few times now. You know, Wesley getting soaked on the holodeck and walking out and there being plenty mm-hmm. of water still on him. Snowballs can survive outside the holodeck. Paper can. I guess Moriarty cannot, and unclear why that is. But Data gives the piece of paper to Geordi, and Geordi flips it over, and it is a pretty perfect drawing of the profile of the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah, it looks like it's been traced out of some sort of technical manual. It's perfect.
Yeah. It may, in fact, have been traced out of one of those books about the Starship Enterprise that they used to publish.
Books that we're saying that we never owned at any point in time in our life. That we will deny to the death.
Yeah. Why do I need to own it when my school library has it?
Yeah, that's a perfectly fair excuse for something that I clearly didn't own ever either.
Yeah. So they...
Like, why would I want to read that on the school bus? Like, that's no way to make friends.
No, yeah. That's a great point, Adam.
It hardly fit into a book bag. Not that I would know, but like its dimension seemed like a little bit bigger than what right. you'd normally pack in there as a sixth grader.
Right, and you got a lot of books and...
A sixth grader just really trying to make any friend at all? Anywhere?
Yeah.
Who sat up front near the driver?
Because
she seemed like the only person you could actually talk to about anything.
No, Adam, are you talking about yourself, or are we just kind of speculating about a hypothetical sixth grader?
So Data and Geordi meet up with the captain and sort of alert Captain Picard that, you know, some shit's going down on the holodeck.
Yeah.
And some of this shit involves a self-aware holodeck character who seems to know it's on a ship, and that shit ain't right.
No, that shit is wrong. Damok and Jalad.
And Picard, to his credit, is like, well, let's shut down the program. That seems easy enough.
Yeah. They discuss a few options for shutting down the program, but Moriarty has taken enough control that they would have to do something pretty drastic, like run warp plasma into the holodeck, which would destroy the holograms, but it would also vaporize Catherine Pulaski, which, you know... Like let's keep that as a plan B, but
that, given Worf's feelings on terminating pregnancies, I feel like that would be Worf's first choice.
Yeah,
like flood the place with plasma. One death is within acceptable limits.
Would that he had been captain in this moment?
Yeah,
he's pretty far down the command structure from the people that are actually going to decide.
As they're talking about these plans, we get one of our biggest bangers of the series. Like, everyone in the room gets rocked because the ship gets shaken, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to call these bangers.
Okay. Bangers it is.
Yeah.
Computer, what happened?
Attitude and stabilization control of the Enterprise was momentarily transferred to Holodeck 2.
One thing that they don't discuss is the possibility of beaming the Doctor out of the holodeck, which I kind of wish had at least been discussed so that they could come up with a fake explanation for why it wouldn't work, but didn't come up, and it definitely, like, it, that bumped me a little bit. But The solution that they arrive at is Worf and Captain Picard are going to put on Victorian costume and go back down to the old holodeck with Geordi and Data. And that leads to a pretty hilarious scene right outside the holodeck where Captain Picard has like a walking stick and a top hat, and it's one of those top hats that like flips out, you know?
Like a magician.
Yeah, and he pops it out, and Worf like goes into karate stance because he wasn't expecting that. ready to take on all comers, Worf.
A warrior's hat.
They go in, and Captain Picard has a confrontation with Moriarty, and so what has happened is that because Geordi gave the computer leave to create a villain that could defeat Data and not just a villain that is capable of defeating Holmes, that is original, Moriarty has awareness of, you know, like he can access the computer banks. He has basically figured out that he is a simulation on a ship, and Picard has to go kind of break the news to him that they don't, like, for all of their advanced technology, they don't have any way of making him a permanent creature that can survive outside the holodeck, which plays right back into the argument that Pulaski and Geordi were having in the beginning, which is Moriarty has self-awareness. He can do things that are unpredictable and make him plausibly self-conscious. I think he passes everybody's Turing test, essentially, but they insist that he is not alive and that he doesn't exist in a real way because he is confined to this one room of this ship.
He has to have that Dear Holodeck moment that he had when he was Dixon Hill at the very end of that episode.
Where yeah.
He's like, hey, I know we got to be friends in this program, but you're fake. And bye!
Yeah. So the captain promises to make Moriarty's program, you know, save Moriarty's program until such time as they can bring him into reality, research pending. And Moriarty is satisfied by that and relinquishes control of the holodeck, and the captain saves his program and they shut everything down, and everything is all good after that. And the last shot of the episode is the USS Victory showing up.
Yeah, Picard sort of lawyers him.
Mm-hmm.
Lawyers him into non-existence.
I am the cutest of all. There are four lights.
Why did Worf even dress up?
Yeah, he just stayed outside the holodeck the whole time.
Yeah, that was a real bummer. I was expecting Worf to interact with some old English people.
Yeah, it would have been fun.
Yeah.
The other thing that I didn't understand about this was Moriarty was a mischievous character, but he wasn't really a villain ever. Like, he kidnapped Pulaski, but he just fed her crumpets and tea.
And Moriarty in the books is supposed to be evil, right?
Right. I think he's supposed to essentially be a psychopath. Like, he's
yeah.
He is willing to use any amount of violence to achieve his ends because he doesn't have any like feeling for. I mean, I'm not like steeped in Arthur Conan Doyle or anything, but he is the opposite of Holmes, right? Like, in that he's like a genius, but he has no scruples.
Do you think that the subtle message there is that with knowledge you can't help but be less evil?
Maybe
as soon as he's granted all of the ship's knowledge through the computer, like, he decides that being a bad person is a pretty shitty path, and he just decides to be malevolently neutral.
Yeah. Yeah, chaotic neutral. I don't know.
Yeah, he would be chaotic neutral, wouldn't he?
Yeah, it's a strange choice because I think that it would have been a much trickier challenge to satisfy a character that is in fact evil, like that is bent on self betterment at the expense of any and all others. Would have been much harder for Picard to overcome.
Yeah, if Moriarty was Armus,
right,
things would have turned out a lot differently.
So nice of the computer to make a villain that was not a psychopath, I guess. But I never felt like there was any actual danger. So yeah. It's really just kind of an interesting dive into the idea of computer intelligence and what it means. But unfortunately, it just kind of rests on this dumb plot device of like, oh, we just told the computer to make something as advanced as Data, which is like, the other thing is like, Noonien Soong is the only person in the universe that has ever been known to be able to create something as advanced as Data. So the computer can do it by accident? What?
Yeah. Yeah, that seems to be a thing that they should do more about.
Yeah.
What did you think of the episode as a whole?
I was remembering it worse than it seemed to me. You know, I remembered an episode that I didn't like very much. You know, I didn't hate it, but I didn't love it. I really enjoyed watching it. I thought it was better than I remembered. I feel like it does have like some key flaws, but
yeah, the story I thought was okay. Moriarty was great. I thought the guy who played him did a great job. His character was pretty interesting to me.
Yeah.
The worst parts were Geordi and Data talking in accents. Like,
yeah,
like that's just really grating.
That was pretty rough.
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda figure in this episode?
Incredible!
Drunk Shimoda!
Sure. Our drunk Shimoda award goes to any character or thing that has an effect on the story similar to Assistant Chief Engineer Jim Shimoda in episode 2.
That's a concise way to put it.
Yeah. So Pulaski was my drunk Shimoda in this episode because she kind of starts the episode as like one of the key agents of the storyline, and she winds up just sitting on a couch eating crumpets and sipping tea the entire time. She makes no attempt to like radio out to the ship. You know, like when it becomes clear that Moriarty is more capable than he should be, she doesn't seem to have any kind of escape plan in the works, and is totally content to just let everybody else sweat all of the details of rescuing her.
Like a lot of drunks, she just hangs out in the bar mostly,
yeah,
and spits just robot racist comments whenever she can. Real awkward.
How about you, Adam?
For me, I had Geordi for the Shimoda in this episode, mostly because like emotionally he was all over the place. Like he was real happy and proud with the model ship. He was explosively angry with Data when he ruined the program early on when they were trying to solve the mystery,
right,
in its first version. And then he also did that thing where he accidentally said something to the computer that had some terrible consequences. And that, to me, seems like a pretty drunk thing to do as well. You get one word off, and all of a sudden the computer is creating a program that could kill you.
Yeah.
Got to be more careful, man.
Dangerous times living on the Starship Enterprise.
Yeah, imagine, God, if Riker said one wrong word in his sex booth. He's dead.
Yeah.
He's just drowned in a wave of flesh.
I am Locutus aboard. You will respond to my questions. I am Locutus aboard. You are Borg.
All right, what do we have coming up next on our next exciting episode in season 2?
The next episode 4 of season 2, The Outrageous Okana. While the Enterprise crew plays host to a witty renegade captain, Data struggles to acquire a sense of humor. Do you remember this episode?
Is this whole season just going to be about Data trying to figure out what being a human is like?
That is, that puts it as a 2 in a row, at least.
I mean, I know I saw this episode originally when it came out, but I don't remember anything about it. And it, in that way, I think it just blends into every episode where Data Data does something annoying to figure out what it's like to be human.
Does your veto tempt you once more, or are you willing to give this one a college try?
I'm curious enough about it because I remember so little that I think I do want to see it.
Okay. Let's see. Do I want to see it? I think I do.
All right.
I'm not going to veto.
Yeah. I mean, it's a Joe Piscopo episode.
Sure.
Got to see that.
Got to see that. Pisc.
That pisk, son.
That pisk, though. Well, we have enjoyed talking to you, fair listener, about this episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. If you want to talk to us about it, why don't you go onto Twitter and use the hashtag GreatestGen. I am at Benjamin R A H R, and Adam is at Cut for Time.
Our opening and interstitial music was created by Dark Materia. You can find the Picard song everywhere on every site on the internet.
Yep. It's actually illegal to operate a website that doesn't have the Picard song on it these days. Go to gach.biz and email us if you don't use Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, go there, drunkshimoda@gmail.com. And that about wraps it up.
Yep. We'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation and a middling at best episode of The Greatest Generation. I've been Ben Harrison.
I've been Adam Pranica. See ya.
Picard.